Okay, alright, welcome everybody. It's good to see you all here. Nice to have you back here on the old sandwich show. And specifically, it is nice to have you here on YouTube for our latest sandwich corner. Nice to have it's good to do this again. I've been doing these kind of shows. Like, this is really nice to just hang out and chat about sports, very low key. And tonight we are joined by two awesome guests. Like, we got our friend Mike in North Jersey back with us, and joining us any moment now, we'll also be hearing from John in Connecticut, who I am then just say no more. John is joining us right here on our Zoom call. So tonight what we're gonna do is we're gonna chat about the latest happenings in golf, and part of that is the Masters recap, which will be condensed this year since I was not able to watch a lot of the tournament. But what a good, great win for Scottie Scheffler once again, just showing how sharp he's been the last couple years. Incredible stuff. In addition to that, we're going to talk about a lot of really big things happening in golf, including some rumblings about Rory McIlroy joining LIV, which were very quickly refuted. But lately, we have noticed that Rory McIlroy has joined the policy board again. So more on that coming up, and other things happening in the world of pro golf tonight. So let's get our panel together. I'll have some things to adjust over here visually as we introduce our friends, but here they are, John and Mike. I will quickly update those captions in a minute, but Mike, let's introduce you to the program first. How's it going, Mike? Welcome back to the show. Oh no, I do not hear Mike. Oh, there we go. Gotcha.
So I noticed your intro, Dave, was a slideshow of burgers.
Yes, that's right.
Now, have you ever bought Dwight and Sons beef? Oh, uh-oh. Dave, just so you know, I'm hearing a bad echo.
Oh, okay. Let me see if I can switch over to the other thing. That's probably why. I think I know why. One sec. Give me just a second here. Just got to go over here and switch that over. Should be all right. We had some issues last week on the Zoom side. That's why. Let's see if this will be better. Okay. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah. Is there any echo?
There is not. I think we're all set.
Okay, cool. Good to have you back.
Okay. I was saying, though, they have this. Now, they're pre-made patties. They're not ground beef, but it's called Schweiden Sons. And I can't believe how good they are. They have a butcher cut, which, ooh, I think is chuck, short rib, and brisket. And then they also have USDA prime ground chuck, which they form into patties.
Nice.
Now, they're definitely a bit on the expensive side, but like, I made some the last couple of days. They are out of this world.
Ooh.
Good. So if you're looking for a homemade burger and they carry that beef around you, definitely pick it up.
Yeah, go ahead and link us like in the chat or just message or just text it to me. Like, it'd be that. Thank you, Mike. That's a great idea. I love it a lot. It's and by the way, really nice to have you back. I mean, it's been about a year. Like, I think last stream we did together was it the U.S. Open? Was it that long ago? Damn, it might have been. It's been a while, but welcome back, Mike. Let's go say hi to John as well. John, welcome to the show. How's it going again? How's it going tonight?
Dave, Mike, hope you guys are doing well. Yeah, I think it's been since July, which would have been the Open, right?
Yeah.
That would have been our last off one. So we did some football talk in between then and now. But yeah, certainly lots in the world golf to talk about, you know, other than people besides Scottie Scheffler just dominating every single week. But I'm sure we'll get to that.
Oh, yeah. Well, it is nice to have you back, fellas. I appreciate you. Andy wanted to join us as well, but could not make it this time, but I do think we'll get him back at some point pretty soon. I feel like he's chomping at the bit to say his things. He did say Scheffler good, Dottie bad, pretty common knowledge at this point, but it was nice to hear from Andy in the text earlier today as well. So yeah, Mike, let's go back to you for a little bit. I mean, we can talk a little bit about the Masters. I mean, not a ton to talk about based on what I understand. I mean, another great performance for Scottie Scheffler. There was some juice in the first round or so, but some people were even calling it. Like, Coach was even saying in the text, and this was the first guest, like, the day two, he's like, well, wait, when does Scottie Scheffler take over and run away with it? And well, for all intents and purposes, he did, but you got to give it to Scottie. I mean, he's been having such an incredible year, and last year was the same. Like, it's just been an amazing spot. And Mike, if you have a moment to to recap some of the particulars of Scotty's great win at the Masters, I mean, what did you think of his performance?
Well, sure. I guess there are two main themes here. One mm-hmm. would just be a general breakdown of, you know, what happened in round four. And then the other is that, you know, Scottie Scheffler being on a run that it's interesting if you want to say it's necessarily better than what Rory did at the end of 2013. I mean, 2014, excuse me. He has more wins, but he doesn't have two majors in the stretch of wins, or Jordan Spieth in 2015. But he's the first player to win four events and five starts since Tiger Woods. I think he's pretty much doubling up Rory right now in the world rankings, number one versus number two. And even if Rom were still around and playing like he was, it would still be a lead in the world rankings like we haven't seen since Tiger Woods. What I think was most impressive about his Masters win, which he then followed up by winning the RBC Heritage by three strokes, just today, actually, you know, with the rain delay.
Mm-hmm.
What was most impressive about it is he won the Masters by four strokes and he did not have his best stuff by any means. If you look at the data golf, very good off the tee, very good around the green, decent putting. But what if you look at his profile for how he compares to a PGA Tour player, it's really the approach play that sets him well beyond anyone. And his approach play was decent to good, not great at the Masters. And the guy still managed to win by four strokes. So, I mean, this is not something that we've seen, really. We saw it with Tiger. Obviously, he could win an event without his best stuff. Granted, he won events without his best stuff in an era that is not as good as the era we have right now. I guess we can say that Rory won the 2014 PGA at Valhalla without his best stuff. He sort of meandered through the first nine of that final round and then got hot late to win it. But really, what the future could hold for Scottie Scheffler, it could be he could definitely win two. Could he even win three majors this year? Maybe. It's not outside the realm of the possibility if he keeps playing like this. But, you know, golf can be fleeting. And I do think that there's a bit of hesitancy. There's a lot of praise. There's a lot of, oh, my God, we're seeing something incredible. But there is a bit of hesitancy, you feel like, this time around, because everyone, they sort of have, well, we saw what we saw from Rory McIlroy. We saw what we saw from Jordan Spieth, and it just kind of went away. So I feel like there's a touch of that in the back of all these Scottie Scheffler stories, that there's a realization now, which I think is an accurate one, that, hey, form can really come and go in golf pretty quickly and without warning, which is true. But right now, it looks like he's really hard to stop. I mean, he went on to a course this week, which is really tight, sort of neutralizes power a little bit, and he still kicked everyone's ass. So he's winning on all these different types of courses, all these different types of conditions, and he's winning by multiple strokes each time. I mean, there's no one even close to him in terms of a complete game right now. And I think the biggest thing that would point towards him to continue having success is that if you look at last year, his ball striking numbers were completely off the charts, ridiculously good. He just couldn't putt to save his life. And instead of the putting eventually dragging down his long game by getting into his head, he figured out the putting, which I kind of, if you had said gun to my head, I probably would have bet that the opposite would have happened, that eventually he would have started pressing and it would have, you know, the being a little bit, you know, frustrated by that would have crept into his game, but it hasn't. It just seems like nothing phases this guy. He just seems so prepared mentally to deal with whatever he's going to have thrown at him. He seems to know how to adjust on the fly. And if we want to jump into what happened in the Masters, we can go to the final round. I mean, he had a really good first round. He hung on in rounds two and round three when really that's all he could do. There were some crazy winds during those rounds, so you weren't going low. It was just a matter of don't blow up. But in round four, he's won over through seven holes. And what does he do? He makes a nice up and down on eight with a good putt to make birdie. He almost hits his second shot in the hole on nine, tap in birdie. Birdie's 10. Bogey's 11, which, all right, that's not that big of a deal. But then 13, 14, and he's able to play Amen Corner in one under par. And everyone else, because the Masters, it did get close there as they were making the turn, as they were going to Amen Corner. But what happened was, is everyone else involved in the mix did something that you absolutely cannot do during that crucial stretch. Morikawa on nine hits it short, and it runs 50 yards back, and he makes double bogey. That is the absolute, you can't do that. And then he follows it up by 11 by pulling the second shot into the water. Again, that's a, there are misses that you can't have at Augusta, and he had two of them, and that was the end of him. Ludwig Åberg, same thing. 11. He pulls the second shot into the water, double bogey. Max Homa double bogeys 12, not in the most traditional way. He didn't hit it short right in the water, but he flew it long. It got caught up in like the rose bushes behind the 12th green, which you can see behind me right there. Got stuck in there, and he makes double bogey. And, you know, Scheffler limited the damage. Listen, you'll take a bogey at 11. It's a 520-yard hole, and basically everyone's aiming to miss the green anyway because they don't want to make double by pulling it in. So from then on in, he was in the driver's seat and he remained completely in control. And what we saw from him was sort of the adage from Ben Hogan, which is that golf is a game of misses. Those who miss the best do the best. And that's really what we saw. He didn't make the big mistakes. He managed things through those windy rounds, and then he did not make the big mistakes where you can really get into trouble. And by doing that, he was able to cruise to a victory. So, you know, his wife is about to give birth. It was one of the storylines was he had said if she had gone into labor, he would have left. So we don't know exactly when we're going to see him again. My understanding is she is supposed to be due, I think, pretty far before Valhalla. So I don't think that will be an issue of him not playing because, you know, she's scheduled to or is giving birth. But we'll see. But we're going to have all eyes on Valhalla here. And I think right now, what are his odds? Like plus 300? Again, that is something we have not seen since Tiger. So, you know, even though we're not going to have all the best players in the world playing these events over the next few weeks, and I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit, we definitely have something to look forward to when we head to Louisville in May.
Yeah, amazing run. You're right about that. And actually, that's interesting that you mentioned the his wife's expectancy, because that was a topic for a few weeks. And it kind of illustrates even more how well his focus has been. Because you can imagine how much he's thinking about that, and yet he still can get it together to put together some great shots when they mattered the most. And as you said, it wasn't the greatest start. It wasn't the greatest round or even the greatest tournament performance. He didn't have his A game, so to speak, but he pulled it together in the crucial moments. So, you know, I got to give Scotty a lot of credit. That's hard to do. Like, that's a true pro that can win despite not having his best stuff. John, let's get your thoughts on the Masters as well. I mean, there's so much to unpack, I'm sure. So feel free to take your time and go through all the scenarios.
What would have been funny is if his wife went into labor like last night, you know, like when he was sitting on the 3-shot lead, like would he have left the RBC Heritage this morning with like two holes to go? I don't know.
Oh, that's a great question.
That would have been kind of fun to kind of play. I'm assuming he would have left, but would have been good for some of us who are betting Patrick Cantlay, but I digress. just incredibly impressive. No one who can just touch him right now at the moment. You know, when we look at the stats from his past 2 years, the approach play is just, it's unreal. And, you know, Mike is right. Like, I'm just looking at it right now. Like, last year he was like finishing top 10 in basically every event, and he could not putt. I vividly remember, I believe it was like the tournament at Colonial last year. I forget exactly what it was, but like his putting was so bad. And he just got himself right out of it. And, you know, he would have had like 4 or 5 wins last year if his putting was good. And it just wasn't. And then he finally put it together this year. And he's like an unstoppable force at the moment. If you remember a couple of years ago, he went on a very similar run when he won his first 4 tournaments, because he won Phoenix and then Players once again, like Match Play and the Masters. So he like won 4. He basically did kind of the same thing that he did this year. So we'll see if the putting stays hot. Like, that's the key to this whole thing. Like, if his putter starts to go cold, then he's, you know, he's still going to be right there, but he might not win some of these events. And the funniest thing is, the only guy to beat him in the last 5 tournaments is Steven Yeager, because he finished, Scheffler finished 2nd at the Houston Open and missed like a 4-foot putt on the last hole that would have sent it into a playoff. So, like, that's the only guy to beat him in the last, you know, 5 tournaments is Steven Yeager, which is pretty crazy to think about. But, yeah, I mean, you thought there for a second at the Masters heading into the back 9 that it was going to be a competitive event. Like, all right, you got like these 4 or 5 guys right there, you know, with a chance. And then literally in the span of 20 minutes, it was over. Like, at the 12th hole, you knew there was no one that was going to catch Scotty. I do give Olberg credit, because he kind of, I mean, he never really threatened, but he still, like, he made some birdies and he continued positive play. He didn't let that one swing on the 11th hole just derail his chances, and he got 2nd along. That's a guy we could get into it after. He'll win a Masters. So he's going to win a lot of majors once he kind of figures out his chipping and putting a little bit better. But this besides the point. You know, Scotty was just unreal and just took over. And honestly, I think it was almost more impressive what he did this week, as Mike mentioned, because the course isn't really designed for like the kind of the bomber who can, you know, maybe miss some fairways and still get away with it. It's like a very precision-esque course. And you even saw the hangover in the first round. Like, he was only 2 under. He like shanked a bunker shot like one of us would hit, and made it his only double bogey of the week. And you're like, all right, this guy, he's going to kind of take like a, you know, he'll get back into it, but finish like 10th place or something. And there he goes, like on Saturday, just 8 under and just dominated the field. And it was basically over. I would have liked to have seen them play more on the weather conditions on Sunday, but of course the tour fucked up with the tee times. They should have moved them up earlier in the day. I have no idea what's going on with that. Like, their own PGA Tour Communications Twitter account puts out the tweet early Sunday morning. Oh, here's the weather for the day. And like 2 and 4 is, you know, 80% chance of thunderstorms. It's like, okay, well, why are you playing later this afternoon? I don't understand. And of course there's a delay, but, you know, that's besides the point. He weathered all the conditions and got the win. But yeah, I mean, the run he's on now, as long as his approach play seems stagnant and, you know, just on this unbelievable streak, like as long as that continues, he's going to be in contention for pretty much every single tournament. And basically what we've seen for the last 2 years, like, it's not going anywhere. So, certainly like the safest bet in golf right now is just to take Scottie Scheffler to win, like +400. I mean, that's really the way he's beating these guys. It's really not that big of a deal. I guess if you were parlaying him and Korda on the LPGA, you'd be making shit ton of money, because she's on a similar role at the moment. So it's pretty impressive stuff.
Oh, very much so, John. Like, it's, and I didn't, you know, it didn't really put 2 and 2 together that he was doing this literally the week after the Masters. Like, you could imagine the hangover effect would be great, and he somehow weathered the storm in that scenario. And what, as you know, everything you just said, like, that's just as impressive, because pretty much anybody else would have probably just been, yeah, I'm good. You know, I would have had they would have been fine. They probably wouldn't have won, but I mean, that's some next level sharpness right now for Scheffler. So pretty intense. And I think, as you said, he's been in the mix in every event for the last like 2 years. Like, honestly, like, if he's not winning it, he's in the top 5 or at the worst, the top 10. It's been such a run he's on. Now, my dad did mention during some of this run that, you know, I don't remember exactly when he said this, but He was wondering, would this go similarly as Mike was alluding to with Rory McIlroy? Was this just a phase? Is this just like a Jordan Spieth phase? It's hard to say, but like, why would he even worry about that right now? Like, he's, let's just savor the run, whatever, how long it goes. And I mean, it's a hell of a run. Even if it is only a small, short-lived run, it's a great run. Like, this is a solid 2-year run now. So, Mike, I'll give it to you for any other thoughts as far as Scheffler. I mean, it's certainly been a great year for him. And nothing really says it's going to go any differently the rest of the way.
Well, yeah, I definitely think he has a better chance than Jordan Spieth did of keeping it up. Because even when Spieth was doing what he was doing, you even saw this when you would see some of the players. I remember there was a story where they wouldn't give you the name of the player who said it, but it was going into the Ryder Cup. And what they did is they interviewed like prospective players from each side to basically give a little rundown on players from the opposite side. So every single quote you saw from unnamed European players about Jordan Spieth when he was absolutely at his best said, yeah, he's really good. Yeah, his speed on his putts is great, but no one can possibly make all of these putts. It's not sustainable, and you can't spray the ball like he sprays the ball and keep it up. Now, I mean, a lot of other things have gone wrong from Jordan Spieth since then, but I think everyone sort of had that a little bit in their head, that it's like he hits too many bad shots. Scheffler hits no bad shots, really. I mean, except for that shank bunker shot. Yeah, you know, what did he do? Although, I guess I'll bring this up because I guess Andy will get a kick out of it. I did notice that in the final round on the 10th hole, he was trying to hit, I guess, a slight draw because there's water left there. But if you're a little bit too far right, then the trees come into play on your second shot and you sort of have to bend them around. So he was trying to hit like either a slight draw or a dead straight shot up the middle of the fairway. And he didn't hit like a slice or anything, but he pushed it right. And he ended up being okay. But when he like took the swing, he like dropped the club afterward. Like, well, not dropped it, but like dropped his arm with the club, like clearly not happy with what he did. And Dottie Pepper's like, oh, this ball's on a great line. This is a great shot. It's like, no, he's going to be okay, but it wasn't what he was trying to do. So I don't know what she was seeing there, but, and then apparently she forgot to pack a warmer outfit and then was complaining about it after the weather break. It's like someone's got to have a sweatshirt or something they can give her. But yeah, but I guess we can just note that he is the first player since Bernhard Langer in 1985 to win the Masters and the RBC Heritage back-to-back. And I think, I don't know this, but I suspect he'd probably be the only player to ever win them back-to-back because I know that Jack Nicklaus won the Heritage and the Masters in the same year, but back then that was 75. Back then the Heritage came like 2 or 3 weeks before the Masters. I think it was Hilton Head, Greensboro, and then the Masters. So it couldn't have been much before 1985 that they started with the Heritage being the week after the Masters. So, and also it's not like he beat a field of scrubs. This was a signature event. Everyone was there. I mean, everyone was there that plays on a PGA tour now. Taylor Gooch wasn't there, so I guess we can't really count this as a win. Oh my, you know, that's something else we have to get into. I guess I'll just get into it now.
Absolutely.
You know, Liv actually has some things going for them right now. They have a lot of top end players. You got Jon Rahm, you got Cam Smith, you got Brooks Koepka, who's got the most majors of anyone in the post-Phil Tiger era. But you see, like, these have to be bots because they come in with these just completely nonsensical takes that... like, there was something like Greg Norman said that Taylor Gooch is one of the best iron players of the last 40 years, and you have all these people just agreeing with that. Who is believing that watches this game? Who is the person that they think is going to read something like this and then goes, you know what? I'm going to tune in to Live Golf now. If anything, I'm now less likely to watch their tournaments because I'm subjected to this shit every time I hit the For You tab on Twitter or X. You know, it's that, some crazy, like, white replacement theory, Elon Musk going on about nonsense, something about vaccines killing everyone, and then crazy stuff about Taylor Gooch. Enough. I don't know who, I really, who is thinking of these strategies? They don't make any sense.
Boy, what has happened to Twitter? I guess this is my first thought.
It's pretty bad. Like, it's just, it's a good place to keep up on, like, news, but just for the takes, yeah.
Yeah.
Liv has a, they've gone like the Russian strategy and probably acquired a number of bots, and then they just spam every post that is made about Liv or anything to do with Liv players, basically. But yeah, it was just hilarious how, like, after, I mean, it is, some of their tournaments are exciting, don't get me wrong. I remember watching the playoff, I think it was their first event with, it was a Sergio, Joaquin Neiman, and then it was somebody else. And Neiman wins it, and it was pretty exciting. And then they're like, "Oh, like, what does this mean?" He's like, "Oh, well, they're not gonna let me into the majors." Of course, he ends up getting like a exemption to the Masters. But it was just like, dude, you just won like a fucking exhibition event that barely no one is watching, and no one really. It's like you're. It's just a circus, and like this means you should get to play in like the majors. It's kind of ridiculous. But. Don't get me wrong, like some of the golf is pretty good, like I just said. But I feel like it's not getting some of the top end players ready for majors. I don't believe players really didn't do that well in the Masters. I mean, the best player was DeChambeau, and he, you know, he ended up coming apart on the weekend. But yeah, it's pretty funny at this point, the Liv bots and how they have to defend these guys with, like, you know, to the death. It was, oh my god, it was one of the funniest things ever. It was like from the each of the teams has their own like account, and they put up like a graph. I forget which team Richard Bland is on. You know, remember him, Dick Bland? So they put up some kind of tweet. It was like, he's finished in the top 16 in the last 8 live starts, and I'm just laughing like, oh my god, there's really not that many golfers. It's not that big of an accomplishment in the top 16 in a freaking 48 player tournament. Like, it's not that big of a deal. Oh my god, it was just hilarious. So yeah, they really need to work on their social presence or get rid of these bots, because it's ridiculous.
Yeah, you're right about that. I did catch that there's not that big a field in any one event. It's a much smaller field than you would normally see in a regular PGA Tour event. And as we know,
yeah, there's only 48 players in each tournament.
So 16 out of 48 is only like.
Oh, don't forget, they gave us. Oh no, let me. I know Mike would love the commentary on Anthony Kim that we're seeing. It's just as bad as people saying Tiger can be competitive. This guy is dead last every single tournament, and they're putting posts of his good shots on the Live Golf Twitter account. And he's dead last by at least 10 shots in every tournament. And they interview him after, and he's just like, I'm just here to make a great impact on the game. Like, you can't even break 80 and you're last in these tournaments. It's such a huge publicity stunt. It's honestly embarrassing that they keep driving him out there every single tournament. I don't, they had to pay off his insurance policy that he supposedly had for not playing golf for a while. It's really sad. It's more sad than Tiger playing at the Masters, honestly, because at least he made the cut there.
Yeah, he did make the cut, and I think that was a big thing. I mean, he was 10 over par, but he did make the cut earlier in the round. So, I mean, that's definitely something. The thing that's really fascinating with Liv is that, I mean, as you said, who's watching it? There have been some rumblings about them wanting to go to 72 holes. Like, Mike, is there any comments on that? Do you think they're starting to kind of feel the juice starting to wane for their circuit? Like, what's your feel there?
So, well, before I answer that, I literally just popped up my phone and hit up my For You tab to make a point. I saw one thing knocking Scottie Scheffler, being like, the dude has never finished better than eighth at the British Open and hasn't won after April. Hype machine is out of control. Now, here's one that's a million times better from Live Golf Insider. Verified account, so paying Elon Musk money for the privilege of nothing. At Live Tracking. Number one iron player in the world, Taylor Gooch, is back on Australian soil to defend his LIV Golf Adelaide title. Sports fans are asking, how long until LIV Golf Adelaide takes the place of the British Open? The corrupt golf media can't comprehend this. Like, this is like a Fox News pitch bot if, you know, conservative political ideas, movements was LIV Golf. It's insane. But, like, I get how that can influence people on politics. Who the hell that is going to watch a regular non-major golf tournament is going to read this and take it seriously? It doesn't make any sense. I don't get it. I don't know what they're doing. Yeah, the Anthony Kim stuff, you know, I guess if anyone wants a quick primer on him, Anthony Kim was a younger, exciting player who I think is probably best known for shooting 28 on the back nine of the Masters in like 2007, 2008. Had some injury problems, was known as a big-time party guy, and then he disappeared for a number of years. The last we had heard from him, I think, was 6 or 7 years ago, where there had been a lot of rumors that he was living under a bridge and stuff like that, and he granted an interview. He hadn't spoken in years and said, no, listen, that's not what's going on, blah, blah, blah. And then there was all this, you know, suspicion that he had an insurance policy. And well, here's what's come out. You can tell by his appearance that the guy, and I don't want to make light of this, he clearly had a lot of issues with addiction. Like one of the nostrils of his nose is like crushed. His eyes, you can tell his eyes have gotten completely lopsided, which is also a sign of, you know, snorting a lot of stuff up your nose for many years in a row. But it seems like he has cleaned himself up. So, you know, that's good to see. But you can't be, LIV Golf can't be trying to say, we deserve world ranking points, we're a legitimate, you know, professional tour here, and then bring this guy on and give him all this guaranteed money. It's like, you know what, if he wanted to do that, what they should have said is, okay, we own the Asian tour, go out, see if you can make some cuts on the Asian tour and get back, like, we'll give you a sponsor's exemption into those, then get back and talk to us. If they had done that, I think they would have gotten some goodwill out of this. But they didn't. They knew that he was like this. They knew that he was sort of, you know, this very hyped, mysterious figure, and they figured it was worth some money, so they just brought him on. Now, he has had one good round, which I did think was nice to see. He shot, like, he did shoot one round in the mid-60s, but everything else is just completely uncompetitive, you know. And keep in mind, this is where you got like a 50, about to be 54 year old Phil Mickelson, who I does not give a shit in those events. You have Bubba Watson, who's clearly given up. You have Dustin Johnson, who's 20 pounds heavier and probably blowing lines between holes. So you have a lot of guys that I don't think are really trying all that hard in LIV. That's kind of the, now listen, if they're in contention, are they trying on Sundays? Yes, of course. But, you know, when they were asking for the world ranking points, listen, they may, the OWGR may have just said, you know, fuck you anyway and not given it to them. But they said, look, give us some sort of like qualification system so that guys can earn their way onto the tour or can be relegated from the tour. Give us some sort of cuts in something, and, you know, give us some 72 hole events. And instead they're just bringing on Anthony Kim. It's like, how does that help your case? And then they withdraw and just scream about, you know, like the, you know, the corrupt media, the corrupt this, the deep state this, and just basically tropes that we try to escape sports. We try to escape from when we watch sports, we now hear with LIV Golf. So, but yeah, I don't know if they're going to go to 72 holes, but if both Phil Mickelson and John Rahm are saying, hey, we got to play some 72 hole events, maybe they will. But who knows? I mean, everything's very much up in the air here. You know, when they had that agreement, I had said when we come on, okay, well, it is a big deal because they're saying we're going to try to strike a deal here, but it doesn't really mean as much as it was being reported at the time. But I don't know exactly what's going to happen, because I think the PGA Tour bought themselves some time with, you know, the investment that they got from these various entities a couple months back. And they may now just be trying to say, okay, if we can get the Saudis to bleed money for another 2 years, will they eventually cave and agree to something much less than they want now? I don't know. It's all very, very, very speculative. But at the same time, if like Rory McIlroy leaves or Oberg leaves or Scottie Scheffler leaves, then that changes the dynamic. Will that happen? I don't really know. It's hard to say. It almost seems like John Rahm has some buyer's remorse right now. The theory is being that what really turned Rahm was the pitch was if you go to LIV, it's going to force them to merge like immediately. And then that hasn't happened. But I don't know. It's very hard to say. It's really just, like I've been saying through this whole thing, it's really a matter of how much money will the Saudis bleed from this? How much are they willing to, how far will they go? We don't know. Seems like they'll go pretty far, but is there a limit? It's very hard to say. So where are we going with this right now? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess the word is
so annoyed.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. Like, it was after his first event, so he gets off the course, and the first question they ask, they say, is like he's like choked down the stretch to lose the tournament. But like, Don, your team won the team competition. How do you feel about that? And he almost like gave the person a look, like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, what's wrong with him? Then he realized he had to compose himself and be like, oh yeah, I'm so happy for the guys. And they like completely cobbled the team together with like within a week. It's Rahm, Hatton, some college kid from Tennessee that they grabbed, Caleb Surratt, and some Kieran Vincent, some international player I've never heard of. So they just, it's a hodgepodge team together, and it's just crazy. But to the point of the they actually do have a relegation system that they implemented at the end of last year. So maybe that goes towards the idea of them trying to get the world ranking points. But the captains can't be relegated to the team. So how legitimate is it if like you can't boot Mickelson or some of the other captains? If they suck, like they shouldn't be part of the league anymore. So they built that protection in which kind of doesn't make it legitimate, in my opinion. But they at least are kind of trying for a relegation. They had it at the end of last year, so we'll see if they continue on that path.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, as you know, from the very from the jump, it does look like there's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of things, a lot of scenarios in the air. But we are starting to see, yeah, like you both have mentioned, maybe some signs of vulnerability or at least some bobbles along the way for the LIV Tour at the moment. I don't know how much you want to comment on the rumblings about Rory, about Rory joining them, because that was a thing about a week ago. Obviously, that was not substantiated. It did not seem like that was substantiated, but I'll give that back to you, Mike. I mean, was that, did you take that news fairly concretely? Did you raise an eyebrow when you saw that? Like, what was your feel there?
I mean, if he went, it would be surprising just because of, even since they started, even since the PGA Tour dramatically changed their stance, he hadn't said anything publicly to indicate that, you know, that he wasn't still like anti-LIV. But at the same time, he could justify it by being like, they lied to me over and over and over. They knew I was the face of the tour and they put me out to say this, say that, say this, say that, and then screwed me when they knew they were talking the whole time. So, you know what? I'm going to get mine. The thing is, like, he's only 34. I almost feel like he makes so much money off the course. And I don't know what LIV is actually offering. I know the number we heard was 850, but it almost seems like, similar to Tiger Woods, that he would do so much damage to his own brand if he went. And couple that with, Rory does not seem like the type of guy who really wants to be told when and where to play along with what to say, that I would be surprised if he did that. Now, do I think he's probably negotiating to, if there's a merger, that he gets some big cut of something? Of course. But at the same time, I mean, something definitely seems off with him this year. He's not playing well. Every single tournament, he makes like multiple double bogeys. Now, is that just because he's distracted, because this is on his mind? Maybe. But I don't know. I think if it were true, we wouldn't get just a flat out denial the next day. Just because that, you know, like I said, damage to the brand, damage to his reputation, damage to his marketability. If there were something to it, I think you'd probably get one of those mealy mouthed, non-denial, whatever, just spiels. So that would be my guess.
Yeah, I think that's a really good argument. I mean, as you mentioned, like the sponsorship arrangement deals he has right now are really, really incredible. So, I mean, any attempt to go in that direction is going to cut into that for sure. So it's a really good observation, Mike. John, anything you wanted to add as far as Rory?
Yeah, no, I don't think that's on his mind, like why he's playing poorly this year. I just think he's in a bad stretch, and like he just can't get himself out of it at the moment. I honestly wouldn't be surprised if he starts to play well now, like the Masters is gone. I think he just puts so much pressure on himself to do well at this tournament every year. And now once that passed, I think he can kind of free himself up for the rest of the year, if that makes any sense. So I wouldn't be surprised if he starts to play better, starting with the he's probably going to play at Quail Hollow, which is the week before PGA, and he just owns that course. So we should expect a good performance for him there. And if we see that, then maybe, you know, it'd be a good sign for him to come for the rest of the season. As far as the live rumors, like honestly, nothing would surprise me at this point with really anybody. But, you know, I could see the scenario as Mike described, where it's basically he's going to kind of wait and get his own when they eventually merge or some kind of deal is cut. Like, I don't see him making the full jump like right now at this point. Although it would be kind of funny for him to kind of just spit in Monahan's face like that. He doesn't seem the kind of guy that would maybe do that. But so we'll see. I definitely think he's angling for something in the future.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, as you mentioned, anything is possible here going forward. So that's the latest as far as living the PGA Tour from what we know so far. Let's look around and just any other news and notes. This is a good time for potpourri. So, Mike, I'll give it to you first. Any other thoughts on pro golf you wanted to get into?
Well, I wanted to piggyback what John was saying in that, if Rory McIlroy's odds dropped enough, I would say, hey, you know, take a flyer on him to win the PGA, considering it's at Valhalla. And if there's going to be, maybe one thing to get him out of this big stretch, it's good vibes, good memories, and he's gonna have good vibes, good memories there. But I just pulled up the odds and he's plus 900, so I guess everyone has that idea right now that, hey, let's take a flyer on Rory. And like, how is Rory plus 9? Well, I'll tell you, a lot of these don't make sense. How the hell is Victor Hovland plus 1800 and Wyndham Clark is plus 2500? You know, we should talk about Victor Hovland. That makes note. Yeah. Victor Hovland has probably engaged in the greatest act of self-sabotage that I have seen in quite some time. The guy is one of the best ball strikers in the world, and he's decided to change his swing, and now he sucks. Now, if you listen to Mike's podcast, which no one does, he was just blabbering on about random stuff. Well, first of all, some of the segues that this guy has, it's like worth listening to just to hear him. He somehow went from recapping round two of the Masters to babbling on about how Shaq's LSU basketball teams weren't any good. And I'm just like, wait, how did we get from here to there? And then apparently, I didn't hear this myself, but apparently the week before, he was talking about Caitlin Clark, and then somehow he referenced his own golf handicap. So it's just like... Yeah, if you want just the craziest transitions and segues, maybe give some of those old ones a listen. But he's just babbling on about people. Well, first of all, he's like, you know, I don't like any old golfers in this event. It's soft there's mud. But he goes, but you know, I'm gonna take Phil Mickelson top 10. You don't like old golfers, you're gonna take a 53-year-old to finish top 10. You can take Phil to make the cut. Okay, I could see that. But and then he's like, you know, he had Victor Hovland as one of his winners. He's like, you know, everyone's forgotten that he's one of the top players in the world. It's like, no, you're not paying attention. You don't realize he has changed his swing. So I don't understand why the hell he would do that. It makes no sense. You know, whoever his agent was should have literally just pleaded with him, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. So,
you know, I've noticed about Wyndham Clark, he gets like no respect in the odds. I'm like, the dude is up there like every single week, and he's consistently higher odds than players that he's beating every week. I don't know if it's because like sometimes his game is kind of smoke and mirrors, like he's just all putting sometimes, but he's clearly improved on his iron play and is more confident clearly. So I just don't understand why his odds are just consistently higher than like, you know, Cantlay and Shoffley and McIlroy, and he's actually been winning compared to these guys. It just doesn't really make any sense to me.
And plus, when he gets hot, he can go like ridiculous. I mean, he had the 60 at Pebble Beach. He had the 65 yesterday and today, and that would have been like a 62 or maybe even lower if he hadn't gotten that. Well, it was a bad decision and a bad break when he tried to take the aggressive punch out, hit the tree, and went out of bounds. Because he was 17 under at that point. He would have been right in the tournament if that hadn't happened. So, yeah, you know what? I'll probably make the bet tonight. Plus 2,500 at like Valhalla. It's a big course. It seems like something that would suit him. So,
yeah, I agree. I would get on that. I feel like that's like future odds. Like it'll completely update in a couple weeks. But yeah, definitely jump on that now. I'm feeling the same thing.
All right. So other topics to talk about. Well, I guess there's one golfer that we haven't mentioned now that we probably should mention. That is the Big Cats.
Yep.
Mr. Eldrick Tiger Woods. This is what people need to understand. Him making the cut those first two rounds, what you saw was a very competent, well-executed, and smart play from a person who was great, but because of age, injury, and now physical shortcomings that he has to live with, is not what he was. And the problem is that they frame these two rounds that he played as if you saw greatness. You didn't see greatness. You saw someone who used to be great. I remember being a kid, and when I first started watching golf, my dad would point out who Jack Nicklaus was because he was still playing in all those majors. He would still have his moments at times. I mean, in 1998, he finished in sixth place in the Masters and was actually in contention for part of it, for God's sakes. But I almost feel like what you see from Tiger nowadays is sort of like watching Jack Nicklaus in the 1990s, in that you'll see some nice shots. You'll see someone who obviously couldn't do what they could do, string some things together, use his smarts, use his guile, and get around the course and find a way to make the cut. I mean, Jack Nicklaus made plenty of cuts in majors in his 50s. And, you know, he wasn't like Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson in that they were really sort of, you know, taking this seriously. He could tell he wasn't. I mean, he was still practicing, but, you know, he wasn't really going out there, you know, trying to win per se. But there has to be this understanding that that's what we're seeing. And you just see all this stuff about the how great it was, how amazing it was to see. He was in 21st place. Now, I understand he hasn't played at all this year, but let's be honest. At Tiger Woods at 48 years old, do you think he really needs to play competitive rounds to know, like, to simulate the feeling, the pressure, or any of that at this point? What does he have? What is he going to go through at this point in terms of the mental side of it that he doesn't, that he hasn't gone through, or that he wouldn't be prepared to deal with? There isn't anything. I mean, listen, it's him, it's Nicklaus, it's Ben Hogan. They're on their own level. He does, all three of those guys could basically, as long as they were practicing, seriously practicing, they could show up at a tournament, and the pressure or the different feels, it wouldn't have mattered to them. So I think that's a little bit, you know, overblown. Now, listen, it is kind of sad to see that the guy basically screwed himself up so badly that he just, you know, he breaks down. And by the time you get, by the time you ask him to play golf and walk, it's really the walking. By the time you ask him to play golf and walk 3 days in a row, he can't do it. But why is CBS showing us every single shot of him when he went three consecutive nines and couldn't break 40? Does even the biggest Tiger Woods fan, do they really want to see that? That's not fun to watch.
He was literally in dead last. Sorry to interrupt, but he was literally dead last on the leaderboard. Yet we saw every single one of his shots on Saturday afternoon. It was ridiculous.
I mean, listen, you can go back, you can watch all of these old Masters, and they did not treat Jack Nicklaus like this. I guess there's not as much coverage back then, but you can go back now. They even have old U.S. Opens, old PGA championships. Just go pop up the coverage a little bit. They did not treat the legends of the game back then like they treat Tiger Woods. And I mean, how much longer is this going to last? Like, what are they getting out of this? You can see it now. The ratings are starting to crash. And it's like, well, if you didn't spend the last 25 years, you know, basically inferring to your audience that golf sucks if this guy isn't playing, and then, you know, maybe you wouldn't have this problem.
Yeah. But, go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
I don't get it. They're never going to stop with this as long as he's playing. Like, and what's it going to come to? I remember making this joke like 6 or 7 years ago on this podcast that, what are we going to do? Are we going to act like the Mitsubishi Electric Championship at Huailai is the biggest golf tournament in the world? Because that might be where this is going, because he can use a cart on the senior tour, and that might be what he's not going to want to do that, but that might be what he has to do if he wants to play any competitive golf.
Because, I was going to say, do you even think he'll, like, that might be a big hit to his ego, honestly, playing any senior tour events. Do you think he'll even do it? I could see him just, like, quitting and just saying, I'm just going to play the four majors every year until I can't, and then just stop.
I mean, I think there's a chance he does that, but Jack Nicklaus said he would never play the senior tour, and he did. Granted, he didn't have anywhere near as much money as Tiger Woods circa like 1990. And then he said, I'll never be a ceremonial golfer and hit the tee shot at Augusta. And then he did. So, but I mean, I don't know, like Greg Norman never bothered to play the senior tour. You know, if Liv had come up, I don't know if Phil Mickelson ever would. Vijay Singh basically just said, screw that, I'm not doing it, and tried to stick around the PGA Tour as long as he could. So I think there's a chance that you're right about that. But I don't know. I think maybe if it gets to the point where he knows I can't walk four straight rounds, that he'd rather do that than, you know, nothing, fade away.
Yeah, It is. I think I agree with your earlier point, though, that it is sad to see what's happened to Tiger. And it's, I mean, I don't know if Tiger necessarily sees himself being a person that can actually compete to win majors at this point. I mean, when he did win, which was as unlikely as you could imagine in 2019, that still was 5 years ago. Like, that's 5 years ago now, fellas. Like, this is definitely a different era, and I don't know what's left. And I think to think that he can still compete in majors is silly, but as you said, Mike, it doesn't seem like the media has given into that idea yet, which is unfortunate, I think.
Well, even before he won, Dave, in 19, he won the Tour Championship just a few months before. Like, he actually had decent form. Like, now he just plays, like, 5 times a year. Like, he plays the tournament in California, and then he plays the 4 majors. Like, he doesn't play any other tournament. So, yeah. he's just his body just can't do it at this point. And, you know, it's pretty sad to see. He'll probably show up at the PGA because he's won there at Valhalla, but probably not going to go very well.
Probably not, but, you know, but, I mean, that's the thing, is that most people will not play golf great after the age of 40, and Tiger is actually closer to 50 than he is to 40 at this point, if I remember correctly. So, let's see, if he was 21 when he won in 1997, then that would make him 3 short of that, so, yeah, he would be 51, 50, yeah, so he's closer to 50 than he is to 40 at this point. So, yeah, I mean, it's been a great career, don't get me wrong, but... You know, I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with Tiger playing any of the majors or doing the things he's doing or even these scores he's having. I mean, you hate to see it because it's like he used to dominate these events. He used to be really great. But it is what it is. I mean, time's going to catch up to everybody eventually. Like, we saw a taste of that with Michael Jordan when he was only, and he was like 39. And he looked like crap when he was playing for the Wizards. So just imagine that, but stretch it out another 10 years. Like, that's just not fun. I mean, that's pretty much all I have to say about it. So, Mike, I can give it back to you. Any other thoughts? I mean, I do appreciate your thoughts. I mean, look, I'm always, whenever you see a legend in the game and they're playing, I appreciate it, even if they're not playing well. Like, it's good to see their face there. You know, we saw, you know, we had seen Tom Watson, you know, in his latter years, still, you know, getting a little bit of juice in the Open Championship and things like that. So that was always good to see. So I don't have a problem with Tiger playing any of these events. Like, I think it's cool. But as you mentioned, the treatment of how these rounds are going is a little much. We can talk about coverage of the Masters if you want, but we kind of covered it already, so I'll just give it back to you. Any other things you wanted to get into tonight, Mike?
I guess just more on a lighter note, I guess. Who the hell are his Tiger's attorneys? How did he not get control of that TW logo from Nike? I mean, he was asked about it when they had like the press conference because TaylorMade now makes his clothing, and they unveiled, like, they call it the Sunday Red. So it has like this, it's like this horizontal like tiger logo. And he's like, oh no, I don't want it. Wait a minute. You have all the money in the world. The logo's not worth anything to Nike because they can't, I guarantee you, they can't like use it for anything, like, as long as he's alive or competing or something. So I don't know how he wasn't able to get his lawyers to talk to Nike and gain control of that. So it's because it's something that's been associated with him now for 20 something years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it looks a little weird to see him out there with these like completely different logos. So I guess Nike realized that the, sand in the hourglass is gone, and you know it's not worth investing any more money. Although, you know, honestly, I was a little bit surprised about that. I thought maybe they figure something out, because even if he shows up or he's doing whatever, just, you know, if he's in the Nike stuff, it's probably worth something to them. But what do I know? He actually does not have an automatic exemption into the U.S. Open if he play. Now, it's already been insinuated that, as long as he tells the USGA, hey, I want to play, they'll give him a special exemption, which honestly, I'm fine with that. They did that for Arnold Palmer. They did that for Jack Nicklaus. They can do it for Tiger Woods if he can manage to walk. Pinehurst will, you know, if his leg is a little bit better there, and if they set that course up like 2014, I actually could see him making the cut. Again, because the walk isn't as bad, there'll be more room. There'll be a lot more room on the fairways than there would be at a traditional U.S. Open setup. And then the way those greens work with, like, they're basically turtlebacks, So they're very demanding as to where you can land your ball and how much space. And, you know, that iron approach game, that'll always be relatively strong for him as long as he's able to swing a club. So, I don't know, maybe you can take a flyer on him, but you never know what kind of tradition he's going to. I mean, a flyer to make the cut, not a flyer to win. That's God. That is not happening. So yeah, perhaps. Anything else worth talking about for the Masters? Oh, why would Jason Day agree to wear this like Melbourne golf attire? Dave, did you see this?
I did not see this. Maybe we should go take a look at this, everybody.
is it true they told him to put it away?
Yes. He was wearing like a vest that in gigantic letters said Melbourne Golf Championship, and apparently Augusta National after the third hole told him, take that off. Dave, he was wearing these pants that when I saw him on the coverage, I thought he was wearing rain pants, but no, they're like these baggy pants with like cargo, like remember the old like cargo pants or painter's pants with the side pockets stuff that were really baggy. That's what they look like. And
I've got a photo of it. Let me go put it on screen for everybody else here is watching this tonight. Like this is
that's ridiculous. And I noticed like a lot of golfers are sponsored by DeWalt now. Like why is a tool company sponsoring golfers? I don't understand the connection there either. Like at first it was Cantlay, and now I see Jason Day has it too. It's just, it doesn't, the brand like matching there doesn't really make any sense to me.
That's a peculiar move. I'm not going to lie on that one either. Okay. I think I got the photos I'm looking for, but I'm just going to double check this because there are a lot of photos, but I'm trying to get one that's large enough to fit
the
screen.
You can't miss this one.
No, I can see that. I mean, all the search results are just loud. They're just like show. Okay, let me see. All right, here we go. Let's go take a look at this, everybody. This is ridiculous. Like, all right, so here's the shirt. Oh my goodness! Yes. He looks like a box of cigarettes. Like, I'm surprised that he was allowed to go into Augusta National with that shirt on. But then we have I don't have one with the pants, but you can kind of see there. Yeah, you know, like all the pockets and everything, which, you know, pretty useful, but still it's kind of a mess. I'm not going to, that is so loud. It's like, who designed that crap? Like, let me see. Oh, I got this one. Okay. So here's the pants. I want to show you the pants really quickly. So the pants look like this. It's kind of hard to tell from this screen cap, but I mean, you can see how baggy they are compared to everybody else's pants. I mean, definitely.
Dave, that outfit, the pants weren't as outrageous. It was either the first or second day that he was wearing was it raining or something?
Let me see.
It wasn't the outfit with the ridiculous vest that Augusta actually made him take off.
Oh, okay. So let me, Jason Day pants. Let's see if it comes up on here. I wonder if these are the ones. Okay, hold on. Let me see if I can. So Melbourne is a clothing company like based out of.
I have no idea what they are.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's hard for me to get a good angle on these, but let me see if I can try. Okay, let's go back to the screen cap. I mean, you can kind of see it here. Like, there's the pants. Like, yeah, like, that's, you could fit like a, you could fit a 2x4 inside his pants. So it's kind of hard to tell from that angle, but it's definitely very baggy compared to like everybody else's pants. So there you go. Yeah, wild stuff, my friends. Like, I don't really have much else to say about it. There is a YouTube thing that says, oh my gosh. Oh, no. This is just an exaggerated look at it. But yeah, I mean, here's one more look. I'll just quickly show it and we'll carry on. But, now where is it? Over here? Here? Yeah, there we go. Okay, back here. Yeah, like, yeah, okay. I don't have a lot to say, but it's pretty ridiculous. So I guess that's about all. I mean, we can look ahead if you want to. I mean, we have about a month until the PGA. So I'm actually pivot to John for this look at. Obviously, Mike's going to have a lot to say about the course. So, but first, let's look at John. And like, what do you have as far as like what's ahead in the near future? And we'll go to Mike for the detailed blow by blow of what's to come in the PGA.
Yeah, we got three tournaments before the PGA. So this week is the Zurich Classic, which is the only team event on the PGA Tour. So the guys, they team up into pairs and they have different formats each round. It, you know, kind of breaks up with not any of the stroke play. So I don't mind it for 1 week. I just wish they'd kept the match play on the schedule. I don't understand why they couldn't find a course or another event to host the match play tournament. Like, that just makes no sense to me. Maybe it'll come back next year. But anyway, this week is the team event. You have some good pairings at the top. You have Cantlay and Schauffele here together, McIlroy and Lowry, Zalatoris and Tagala. That's a good pairing. Morikawa and Kitayama. Those are like the top four like power teams. The Hogard brothers are playing. So it's kind of a fun little event. But you know, the quality really drops after the first, you know, 10 or so teams. It's pretty rough. So, you know, tune in if you like some different version of golf. And then next week is the Byron Nelson event, which I imagine like there'll be nobody playing at. It'll be a pretty weak field, and the course is just a complete joke. It's like, I think 27 or 28 under one last year. It's just every hole is just straight and long, and they just hit over a creek on every hole. It's a really dumb course, and the score is going to be, it's like a pigeon putt for PGA Tour pros. It's so easy, which is crazy to say on the PGA Tour, but it's, if you like low scoring from no names, like that's your tournament. It's like, it seems like some random Asian wins every year. And like last year, Jason Day won. And then you have the Wells Fargo Championship at Quail Hollow, which I mentioned earlier. So that is a signature event. So that'll be just like what we had this week with RBC. It'll be the best, you know, 70 players on tour, and you know, it's a great course, and that'll be a good tournament leading up to the PGA. So we got two kind of duds, and then a really good event, and then the PGA back at Valhalla. And Mike can go more into the course, but from what I remember, it was pretty easy. Like, I barely remember like Tiger back in the day. Like, him and Bob May had the playoff, and I feel like they were like 19 under, and then McIlroy, when he won in 14, I feel he was like 15 or 16 under. So it's going to, unless like changes have been made, I remember it being a pretty easy test for these guys. So, but hey, it's a major, so we'll take it. But it just kind of, you know, you would rather see kind of what we saw like at Oak Hill and at, of course, in Oklahoma, Southern Hills for a PGA Championship rather than like a birdie fest.
Yeah, that's fair, John. I mean, if it's too easy, it's not really great to see. So, but with that said, let's go to Mike and let's get your look ahead at what's cut to come, including Valhalla.
Should probably learn how to drink a drink without putting it down. Jesus Christ. Right, I've actually been sipping on an Azalea cocktail, which Augusta National was nice enough to release the official recipe of how to do it. Now, it shouldn't make you cough like this. This is my own incompetence. So, yeah, don't judge it based off that.
Okay.
They don't sell it like at the concession stand. It's like something that's at the clubhouse or in a club area. But all it is lemonade, vodka, and grenadine. But it is outrageously good. Like, you can make like a double, like two shots of vodka, and you won't taste the alcohol in it. Now, I actually make it with sugar, or not low sugar lemonade. I think if you made it with full like sugar lemonade, it'd be way too sweet, because grenadine, like two tablespoons of that is like 80% of the sugar you're supposed to have in a day. So but yeah, no, give it a shot. It is absolutely, I trust me, I had my fair share of those when I was watching the Masters last week, that's for sure.
Yeah, I've been looking for new vodka drinks. I'll give it a try.
That sounds great, good. Mike.
Yeah, oh, definitely give it a shot. So getting into what we have coming up. Yeah, what's happened with the Byron Nelson is just a joke. You know, for a year it was at like TPC, what was it, Las Colinas or something. And that wasn't anything special, but it wasn't a bad course. Seemed like it there were some, you know, pretty exciting finishes. And then they had it at, what was the name of
it? It was like a plains course in the middle of Texas. I forget the name.
Yes.
It was like a Lynx course.
Yes. It was a Coren Crenshaw design. It was very highly regarded by like golf architecture people, but the players hated it because it was quirky. And now they're at a place that I believe was a like a Corn Ferry Tour mainstay for a number of years, or it might have been a Senior Tour mainstay. And it's just, you know, it's not a challenge, like John said. One thing I will bring up, even though I don't necessarily expect people to watch opposite field of events, is that there is a new opposite field event going the same week as Quail Hollow, the Wells Fargo Championship, the Myrtle Beach Golf Classic, and that is going to be at the Dunes Club in Myrtle Beach, which is supposed to be a really, really, really good course. An early Robert Trent Jones, a lot of people would say his best work. So, I mean, that course is on the moon compared to TPC Craig Ranch. So it's a little bit of a shame that they're going to come in with this new venue that's very highly regarded, and it's going to be an opposite field event. But, you know, if you want to see like a top end course at what is one of the like big golf destinations in the country, Myrtle Beach, might be worth checking out for a couple of holes. Valhalla. Yeah, the thing with Valhalla is it has a history of producing very, very, very exciting finishes. I think the 96 PGA was there and Mark Brooks won. And I forget exactly what happened, but I know it was really close, came down the stretch. Obviously, there was the we had Tiger Woods in a close one with Bob May. We had the 2008 Ryder Cup was at Valhalla. And then, you know, 2014 PGA, which was also very exciting. My hunch is that Valhalla will play more difficult this time around because Louisville, Kentucky in August, with the humidity, with the pop-up thunderstorms, you know, the course is just going to be soft. Now, look, it could rain in May. You can absolutely get thunderstorms and stuff. But my hunch is that just with cooler conditions, less humidity, and also adding in what it seems like the PGA is trying to do with their courses now, that it will play more difficult. I know I actually bought the EA Sports Golf video game a couple months ago, and I did pop up Valhalla, and I think they can stretch that course out like really, really, really long nowadays. Like, I remember that there's that one hole where it's kind of, it's not the best hole. It's very quirky in how it works. It's that you drive the ball and you have to like drive it past a tree line in order to, and then there's a creek on the right. So you drive it down and then like from, you drive it down the fairway and then the hole is like off to the right. Now they have lengthened that hole. So it's like 500 yards. So you have to hit either a three wood or actually all of them are probably going to hit three wood. Driver's probably too much. And then you're going to have like 220 yards into the green there as opposed to, I don't know what was playing the last time, like 180, 190. But yeah, that's going to be a difficult hole. I know the second hole, it's the second or third. That's a converted par five. So that's difficult. Yeah, but my hunch would be without, because the last time they played 2014, that final round, that was delayed a little bit because of weather, because of rain. So it was soft and they, you know, the guys torched it basically. My hunch is it will play more difficult, but, you know, we don't control the weather. Although, I don't know, you go on your For You tab on Twitter, along with the Live Golf Bots, you'll probably see something saying that we're controlled, you know, we're launching pills or lasers or something into the atmosphere, and that's what's going on. That's why there's all that flooding in Dubai. I did see that on Twitter last week, that the atmosphere was being altered, along with Taylor Gooch being the best iron player the last 40 years. So, yeah, I suspect it will play more difficult, but we got to see what the weather forecast will be.
Yep. Time will tell. And I think I'd like to go back to John for some quick hitters on the PGA. Any other thing you'd like to add?
Yeah, nothing on the course, because like I said, I just have vivid, not very vivid memories of it. Just kind of in my mind, I know 18 is a par five. It's pretty exciting. With like they have some big mounds around the green, and it's just that definitely can lead to an exciting finish for sure with a par five. And just in my mind, I'm thinking of like big hitters, because I remember like having a driver would be very important, because like when Tiger was at his hay game, like he was like one of the longest players on tour, and like that was the whole thing, is his advantage with the length off the tee. So it's just like your usual suspects, like obviously Scheffler's going to be right there, but I feel like this could be a good course for obviously McIlroy, because he won, John Rahm, Koepka could be right in the mix, Ludvig Åberg. I know he had a rough Masters final round, but this seems like a course that would fit perfectly for him, just in terms of his driving and his irons. Like he does have to improve on his chipping and putting, but his swing is just impeccable. So he's definitely someone to watch out for. It's going to be exciting. I'm probably going to get down some of those pre odds. I like that Wyndham Clark 25-1. He's just in contention in every major at this point.
What would be, if you don't, that's fine. But I'm curious as to what a top 20 or a top 15 finish for Wyndham Clark would be. On the board. Same thing for Scheffler, because, well, Scheffler's probably going to be like minus like 300, 200 or something like that. But
yeah, no. Yeah.
So that is not worth
Clark,
it.
I mean, top 10 or 20 would probably be a little in plus odds for top,
okay,
top 20, I guess, or maybe even money.
Yeah.
Definitely top 10 would be plus odds. Scheffler, no. You have to, you have to either bet him to win or don't.
Yeah, that's fair.
You're not going to get any placement market with him.
I love the thought. I love the play, though, for Clark winning the tournament, because, like, I think that's a sleeping tiger for a lot of people, or a sleeping giant, so to speak. It's a very, very good, very savvy thought there. And you figure if it's
not... I will also toot my own horn. I had, I'll mention him as an up-and-coming player, Akshay Bhatia. He's got a lot of game, this kid.
Mm-hmm.
I had him 65-1 a couple weeks ago at the Texas Open. And it was about to be one of the worst beats of my life, because Denny McCarthy, I'm sure Mike saw it, but Dave, if you don't know, Bhatia had like a 6-shot lead heading into the back nine and shot 2 under, and he still had to go to a playoff because McCarthy just went absolutely nuclear. He was making every chip, every putt. He shot like 8 under over the 9 holes, and then he put it in the water with his wedge shot in the first playoff hole.
Mm.
So I ended up winning my bet, but yeah, Bhatia, he's definitely one of these younger players that we have to look up for. He's been a pro now for like 3 or 4 years. He didn't go to college, and he's just got a tremendous his approach game has been really good lately, and his short game as well. So he's definitely someone to watch out for. That's kind of up and coming. Him and Ober, as we mentioned, gets all the attention, but I really like what I've seen from Akshay recently.
That's good to know. Thanks for the heads up on that. I mean, I can see that golf's in a really good place, despite the league fragmenting. But maybe it's not as bad an erosion as one might perceive, especially when you.
I don't know, Dave. The ratings are significantly down this year.
Oh, really?
So maybe... I mean, when it first started, when LIV first started, even into the second year, the PGA Tour actually put up some pretty strong ratings. The ratings this year are not good. Ooh. And they weren't good for the Masters either.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, that's the other thing going on, where there's a thought, hey, we may need to, get a move on this, because we're all going to lose money if this continues.
That's fair. I mean, we talked about it when they were chatting about the merger. We were just thinking, well, this is just decreasing our interest in both of these leagues. And surely enough, I've been watching a lot less golf. So maybe I think you're onto something here, Mike. It's like, I think the hope is that they unify this in some level, whether it means they merge, whether it means that the LIV just folds or PGA just buys them out, whatever they come up with this to put everything back together. It might be what they need to do at some point, because as much as I like John Rahm, I'm like, I'm not going to turn the CW just to watch him. Like, there needs to be more there than just John Rahm. Like, John Rahm's great, but You know, if he's not driven, like you said, there's some buyer's remorse there too. So I do hope that they'll come to some kind of way of bringing things back to the levels in terms of popularity that they once were. That's too bad, but I'm not surprised. You know what I mean?
I mean, the PGA fields are kind of watered down too. I mean, the signature events are good. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. This past weekend was great. You had all the top players there, but just the kind of standard events or after the first few players, it gets pretty rough down the bottom. You know, just from doing like my own pick 'em pool, it's just like, oh my God, like the bottom of the field on the PGA Tour is just horrific when you start getting down to it. But it's like, and also the signature events, I don't understand why they're giving exemptions to like Kevin Kisner and Webb Simpson, who cannot play golf anymore. Like, why aren't you giving that to like expand that like Aeon 10 or whatever list it is and give more exemptions to guys who are actually playing good golf instead of Kevin Kisner, who cannot even break par anymore? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's yeah. And like you said, like that's the thing too. So it's like, it makes the regular events tougher. One thing I was wondering just in my head was like, does this devalue to a degree Scottie Scheffler's success lately? I don't think it does, because he's also doing it on the majors when everybody's playing, all the big players are in them. So probably I don't think that devalues what he's doing even on the regular events either. You still have to win these events. Like, you still have to do really well and stay sharp and stay focused. So I don't really see that being an effect on that specifically, but has it crossed your mind too, Mike? Like, what is your thought as far as Scheffler amidst the prism of what's happening with pro golf on the whole?
No, it doesn't, because listen, ultimately Scottie Scheffler's career will be judged on what he did in the majors, and in the majors, all those guys are there. And look, it's not to say that regular events don't matter. They do. And they're definitely something to watch and pay attention to and get caught up in. But even before we had a schism in pro golf, it's not like every player was at a regular event, especially before we had this signature event model. It was very much, you know, you'll get a handful of top players at one event, you'll get a handful of top players at another event. Now, some obviously attracted more than others, but there wasn't this great, okay, this is a signature event, everyone's here. It was much more spread out. So, you know, if you were winning the, you know, even the, and tournaments would change. Like, I remember in the early 2010s, no one was showing up to play at Riviera in the Genesis. So you're going to say that winning that didn't matter. And, you know, a lot of people would show up and play the Honda Classic, the first event in Florida, but it wouldn't be every single person. So you can say that, like, well, okay, Rory McIlroy won that in 2012 and beat Tiger Woods, but not that many other top players were there. It doesn't matter. No. So I don't think that's fair to say. But again, with the caveat that ultimately Scottie Scheffler gets, I mean, so if someone comes along and wins the last three majors of the year, I mean, that's not going to happen. But if it happened, no one's going to remember like what Scottie Scheffler did this year in 15 years. It'll be about that person. So yeah, and you can't knock him for playing against who he's playing against. They're still, you know, very high-end quality fields. And it's nothing new that not every top player in the world is not going to be at a regular event.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good take. I mean, I've certainly not docked him for the situation either, because you know, even if you don't have the greatest field, you still need to be sharp to win an event, no matter who's playing. You have to play well too, you know what I mean? It's like, so ultimately it's you versus the course. So I'm totally down with that thought. And John, I'll give it to you for anything on that, and then also pass it to you for final thoughts.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think even though the fields might be slightly watered down in the regular events, but that's kind of how it always is. It's more like the mid-tier players that went to live that kind of, you know, make them weaker, more so in terms of the depth of the field. Like, you always had your handful of random top players that would play. It was just kind of the middle group of players that make some of these tournaments stronger, and now you just don't have that. But yeah, the majors are the majors. Like, those aren't going to change. And, you know, Scotty dominating and winning those, like, I don't take anything away from him with this current, you know, schism in golf. So I'm definitely not. And yeah, as terms of final thoughts, I mean, we're in a kind of a predicament right now with how the game is going, and there's really no end in sight with this, you know, battle between PGA and LIV, and we're just going to have to ride it out and see what happens and just enjoy the golf that we can. I mean, like I said, we got some tournaments coming up, and when I check out LIV, it's LIV Adelaide on the CW this week. I have no idea when it's live, what time it's being broadcast, but it was named one of the best tournaments last year. So
okay,
there you go. And we'll see what happens at Valhalla, and we'll be back here in a month.
I love it. I love it a lot, John. Thank you so much for stopping by for this, of course. And it's well said. Mike, let's give it to you for final thoughts.
Well, I think I will write one of the LIVBots' next tweets for them, because I just saw that Taylor Gooch is 100-1 to win the PGA Championship. You know who else is 100-1? Tiger Woods. So what does that say? Taylor Gooch has the same odds as the greatest player ever to play golf, and he was kept out of the Masters, so Scottie Scheffler's win doesn't count. There you go. I mean, they will tweet out something that ridiculous. Oh, my God. Yeah, just to echo what John had to say, it's funny. Obviously, we're still invested in the golf, him and I, but you're sort of waiting, like, with one eye behind your back to, are we finally going to get a resolution to this? And there was a lot of talk that they were trying to get it done before the Masters, and, you know, it didn't happen. So how much longer will it go? You know, like we said before, who the hell knows? So, look, hope for a close event this week, because if that team event, if that's close coming down the stretch, that can be very, very exciting to watch. If it's not, it's a complete bore. But like that year where they had, what was it? It was Schwartzel and Oosthuizen against, who the hell were they playing? They lost. I don't remember.
It was in Cam Smith and Leishman, the wrong list.
Yes.
Now.
Yeah. Oh, wow. But yeah, when that like came down the stretch and I went into a playoff, the alternate shot, that was great to watch. So hope that you get something like that. You'll have a very exciting Sunday. Got the NHL playoffs going on. Mm-hmm. Of course, the Rangers are basically playing a Bantam AAA team, so that's not going to be competitive. Unfortunately for yours truly. Oh, God. You know, if they win the Stanley Cup, I may have to excuse myself from the U.S. Open recap, because I may just, like, lose it on here if that happens.
Mike, you have to give it to them. They're a great team, though. They're a very good team, to be fair.
They're a very good team, but can we calm down a little bit?
I will also agree with your point. I'm glad that I've found another voice on stream that has made the point that I've been making as myself about the Capitals. It's not, I mean, there's an old team making the playoffs. I mean, good for them making it in, but I mean,
look, to be fair, you can't hold that against the Rangers. They finished with the best record in the Eastern Conference and the best record in the league. Their reward is they get to play the team with the lowest amount of points. Now, fortunately for them, they have the team with the worst goal differential since 1991 to make the playoffs. But what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? I mean,
all right. So, yeah, anyway, PGA Championship in a few weeks, U.S. Open the month after that. Open Championship a month after that, and it'll all be over before we know it. So,
wow.
Hopefully we get some exciting
and
events.
Olympics this year.
What's that?
Olympics, too. The Olympics.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Olympic golf.
Yeah. Well, that's at Le Golf National where they had the Ryder Cup, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that should be exciting. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
We'll see. So, yeah, some good golf to look forward to. Mm-hmm. Hopefully some good NHL hockey to look forward to. I know we got the Knicks in the mix here, too. So,
yeah, Knicks had a nice comeback tonight.
Yeah,
I mean,
so, some excitement in the New York area over these next few months.
Good stuff. Yeah, I mean, John, I don't know if you've been following. I mean, I don't know if you've been following the scenarios in the playoffs too. But yeah, a lot of juice tonight. It was crazy.
Oh yeah, I've been following. I got some bets in every night. Don't you worry, Dave.
Yes. There we go. I love it. Well, good luck to your action as you go through the rest of these next 2 months. There's going to be a lot to bet on in both sports. And for example, you can bet on the Edmonton Oilers in a moneyline parlay with some other team. I feel like that's a great play tonight. Hate to say it, but you know the Edmonton is pretty.
I took the Kings, so maybe I think I feel pretty good now. Kings
money line. Well, the mush always can sometimes do good for our friends here in the community. So I hope. I mean, personally, I want the Kings to win the game, right? Like I would definitely love it. We'll see. It worked in 2012 though, so we'll see. And 2014. But thanks, everybody. It's so good to see you again. I know it's been a minute. Hopefully, we'll catch up with you again pretty soon. And Mike and John, all the best. And enjoy all the games. And have a good round whenever you get out there to play yourselves. So much love to both of you. And take care, my friends.
Take care, guys.
All right, see you guys.
See ya. Thanks, John. Thanks, Mike. That's our friend. Those are our friends, John and Mike. Knew I could count on John to keep the action going over there in the NHL and NBA. That's great. It's great stuff. A lot of good juice tonight. We'll actually pick up this conversation over on Twitch. We're going to go hang out over there in roughly half an hour. So, oh, there's your first goal by Edmonton. I mean, it's all right. It's all right. Well, the Kings are wearing their throwbacks tonight. I mean, that's good. You know, there's a positive. Like, yeah, but Edmonton's up 1-0 in that game. I hope you enjoyed this program tonight. It was really great to hear from John and Mike. Great golf analysis, as always. If you missed any part of it, you can catch the replay on YouTube immediately after the stream ends. And you'll see the audio podcast on all podcast players. Look for the Sandwich Corner and catch all of the particulars from John and Mike. They've done a great job. And shout out to our friend Andy in Seattle who couldn't make it tonight. But we hope he's enjoying his evening and hope he's enjoying this program after the fact the next day if he has a chance to tune in and listen to all the scenarios. So that's it from here. We are back next week. We're going to talk about NBA playoffs with our friend who you call the Sports Pope on YouTube, but we call him Chris in Georgia. And next week it'll be a great time. So we'll be back here on Wednesday night on YouTube. And obviously, you'll catch me on Twitch the rest of the week. A lot of big things happening on Twitch. This is the next 2 weeks on the Sandwich Show, on the Big Sandwich Show, including tonight, where we'll be on to just do our chatting hang and play. I'll play some music too, as we follow the Kings game and Lakers too, Kings and Lakers at the same time. So let's catch us there at the top of the hour if you're watching us live. We have more sports coverage on Twitch on the Sandwich Show, on the regular Sandwich Show. So that's coming up on Twitch Thursday night at 10 o'clock Eastern. A fellow sports host, Robbie G Sports OTHP, will be joining us on Tuesday from 10 o'clock to about, I don't know, 10 o'clock to about midnight Eastern time. And we're going to recap the NFL draft. We're going to talk about more playoff action with all the teams and all the scenarios there in the NBA and the NHL. So, and then we'll talk about other things like music and what have you on our latest Sandwich Q&A. That's a little bit different day, but we will see you then Thursday night, twitch.tv/DaveEasyEatingASandwich. And if you want to catch all the shows that, all the nonsense we do at the Sandwich Show, we're on 2 to 3 times a week. Just follow Dave Easy Eating a Sandwich on Twitch. That's me. And I'll have more there too. And over here, we'll see. Have a great rest of the week. We have a lot of content on YouTube, including these episodes, plus the archives of the Sandwich Show, on some other highlights, all sorts of fun things over there. YouTube Shorts also has a lot of content. So good night for now. I'm Dave Medina. You know me as Dave. He's eating a sandwich on all the platforms. Have a great rest of your night. And if you happen to be watching this live, we'll see you on Twitch in just a few minutes. Good night for now. Thank you and take care. We'll see you next time.